Welcome back to Science TLDR, where we dive deep into the latest research.
Glad to be here.
Today, we're tackling something fundamental, but incredibly complex. How do the trillions of cells in our bodies across all our different tissues actually coordinate?
Right. It's not just about individual cells doing their jobs. They have to work together systemically.
Exactly. And how does that coordination change in, say, aging or diseases like cancer? It feels like a huge puzzle.
It absolutely is. We're talking about, what, 37 trillion cells? Mm. And while we have great resources like the Human Cell Atlas listing cell type.
Yeah, the inventory is getting pretty good.
Understanding how they function together in their environments, forming these coordinated units, maybe even across tissues, that's been the bottleneck.
Because the existing tools, even the spatial ones, they give you the local snapshots.
Yeah. Right?
But maybe not the whole system-wide network view at single-cell detail across lots of tissues at once.
Precisely. You miss the forest for the trees sometimes. Or maybe the cross-forest connections. Which brings us to our source for this deep dive. It's a fascinating new paper in Nature.
Okay, what's the title?
It's called A Pan-Tissue Atlas of Multicellular Coordination Units and Their Remodeling in Aging and Cancer.
Wow. Okay. Pan-Tissue, Multicellular Coordination Units, high ambitions. So our mission today, unpack this paper, understand these coordination units, and see what they tell us about health, aging, and cancer.
It's about thinking of tissues less as bags of cells and more as interacting ecosystems.
Let's get into it, starting with the VAP itself. How did they even begin to tackle this scale? 37 trillion cells.
Well, the first step was building the foundational data set, and it's massive.
How massive are we talking?
Over 2.29 million high-quality single cells.
Whoa!
Yeah, from 706 healthy samples covering 35 different human tissues, just assembling and harmonizing that data is a huge undertaking.
Harmonizing must have been tricky. Different labs, different methods.
Definitely. They actually had to benchmark different computational tools just to integrate everything effectively, to make sure they were comparing apples to apples across all these diverse samples. BBKNN was the one that worked best for them.
Okay, so a major computational lift just to get started. What did the first look at this huge integrated atlas show?
Well, the basics held up. You plot the cells, and they mostly cluster by tissue type, which you'd expect. Skin cells look like skin cells.
Right.
But importantly, their integration method worked well. Cells of the same type from different people or tissues clustered together nicely, suggesting they removed a lot of the technical batch effects.
Good. And they grouped them broadly first.
Yeah, into 8 main cell lineages using known marker genes, things like immune cells, endothelial cells, stromal cells, you know, the major categories.
And I saw immune cells were a huge fraction, almost half.
That's right, about 45%. Which makes this atlas an incredible resource just for studying immune cell diversity and distribution across the entire body.
Makes sense. And the mix of cell types varied a lot between tissues.
Oh, absolutely. Immune organs were packed with immune cells, obviously. Reproductive tissues had loads of stromal cells. It paints that first picture of tissue composition.
Okay, broad strokes down. Mm. But the real power is zooming in, right? Mm. Did they find finer distinctions? Cell subtypes?
Exactly. They dissected those broad categories further and found many distinct cell subsets or states. And here's a key finding. Even subsets of the same broad type often showed really strong preferences for specific tissues. They weren't just randomly distributed.
Give us an example. What surprised you?
Well, endothelial cells lining blood vessels versus lymphatic vessels showed clear differences, which maybe isn't too surprising. But how about this? Age-associated B cells, or ABCs.
Yeah, I've heard of those, usually in spleen, bone marrow.
Right, the expected immune sites. But they found significant populations in the ureter and even skeletal muscle.
Skeletal muscle. Huh. Okay, that's definitely an aha moment. What about fibroblasts, the connective tissue cells? They're everywhere.
Everywhere, but not the same everywhere. They found some universal fibroblast subtypes present across many tissues, but also highly specialized ones. And interestingly, the reproductive system seemed to lack some of those universal types and instead had its own unique set.
Suggesting very specific roles there.
Precisely, different structural or signaling needs.
And could they actually see where these subtypes were located within a tissue, like spatially?
Yes, they used spatial transcriptomics Visium technology to validate this. In the uterus, for instance, they identified 2 specific fibroblast subsets in the single cell data. Mm-hmm. And the spatial data showed one was clearly located in the endometrium, the lining, and the other in the myometrium, the muscle wall.
Wow. So the single-cell clusters correspond to real, spatially distinct populations. That's crucial.
It really anchors the findings in tissue architecture. So this atlas provides an incredibly detailed map of cell subsets and where they like to live across the body.
A fantastic resource. But it sets up the main question. How do all these different cell players actually coordinate? How do they form functional teams?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? They use the example of gut immunity, a known complex interplay. But are such coordinated multicellular ecosystems a general principle?
So they set out to find these recurring teams computationally.
Yes. They framed it as searching for co-occurring cellular networks. And to do that, they developed a specific computational framework they called CoVARNet.
CoVARNet. Okay, break that down. How does it find the teams?
It's clever. It essentially looks across all those hundreds of healthy samples and asks which cell subsets tend to increase or decrease in abundance together.
Ah, so it's looking at covariance. If subset A goes up when subset B goes up consistently across samples, maybe they're linked.
Exactly. It suggests some kind of functional relationship or mutual dependency, even if they aren't direct neighbors. It uses matrix factorization, specifically NMF, to find these groups of covarying cells, and then correlation analysis to map potential connections within the groups.
So it's a statistical link based on abundance patterns across the whole data set. That's different from just looking at proximity.
It captures potentially longer range or non-obvious connections, and the results were striking.
What did they find?
Applying CoVARNet to the non-epithelial cells in their atlas, they identified 12 distinct multicellular modules, CMs.
12 core teams across 35 tissues. That seems fundamental.
It really feels like it. And most cell subsets, about 88%, were part of at least one CM. Some even belong to multiple CMs, suggesting they can play different roles in different contexts.
Flexible team members?
Kind of. And importantly, no single cell type dominated all the CMs. It looked like distributed networks, not one central controller. The overall activity of a CM in a sample also correlated well with the frequencies of its member cells.
Makes intuitive sense. Did they classify tissues based on these CMs?
Yes. Each sample tended to have one dominant CM, which allowed them to define 12 CM types, or CMTs. And critically, these CMTs weren't confined to single organs. Each CMT spanned multiple tissues.
Reinforcing the cross-tissue idea, how did they make sure these CMs were real and not just patterns in their specific data set?
Crucial question. Validation. They turned to a completely independent, large data set, bulk RNA-seq data from the GTX project.
GTX. Thousands of samples.
Exactly. And they found they could recover highly similar CMT structures within GTX. Plus, the genes defining their CM cell subsets showed consistent expression patterns in the GTX data corresponding to the predicted CMTs.
Okay, that independent validation adds a lot of weight. These CMs seem robust.
It strongly suggests they represent real, fundamental organizational units.
So we have these 12 multicellular teams. Where do they actually operate in the body, and what do their compositions suggest about their functions?
Right, linking structure to function. Most CMs showed clear preferences for certain organ systems. Mm-hmm. The immune-heavy ones, CMs 04, 05, 06, 09, were, as you'd expect, enriched in places like lymph nodes, spleen, blood. Their cell makeup screamed immune function.
Checks out. What else?
CMs 07 and 12 popped up mainly in reproductive tissues, featuring those specialized fibroblasts we talked about earlier.
Okay.
Then you had barrier-associated CMs 02, 03, and 08 prevalent in the gut, urinary tract, skin, mouth, places dealing with the outside world, likely roles in mucosal immunity, tissue defense.
Makes sense. Any others stand out?
CM10 was clearly vascular, full of parasites, smooth muscle, endothelial cells found in heart, skin, fat, places with lots of vessels. CM11 seemed metabolic, enriched in lung, kidney, liver, fat.
And wasn't there one that was sort of everywhere?
Yes, CM01, that was the universal module. It contained tissue-resident macrophages, those common fibroblasts, lymphatic endothelial cells. It was found across almost all systems.
Like a basic tissue maintenance or surveillance crew?
That's a good way to think about it. A core organizational unit present in many different contexts.
Okay, so mapping CMs to systems gives functional clues. But did they look inside tissues again? Spatially, where are these teams physically located relative to each other?
They did, using the spatial transcriptomics data again. And this really brings the CMs to life. In skin, for example.
Uh-huh.
CM08, the barrier immune one, was mostly in the epidermis and upper dermis, the front lines. CM10, the vascular one, was deeper, in the dermis with the blood vessels.
So the location matches the likely function.
Exactly. And you could even see areas where they overlap, suggesting interaction zones. This wasn't just a one-off, it was consistent across different skin donors.
Very cool. What about a complex tissue like the small intestine? They found multiple CMs there, right?
Yeah, CMs 02, 03, and 05. The spatial mapping was really informative there. CM 05 maps strongly to Peyer's patches.
The immune induction sites in the gut.
Precisely. Whereas CM02 and CM03 were located throughout the intestinal mucosa, the effector site where immune responses happen, it perfectly mirrors the known functional geography of gut immunity.
So the CMs partition neatly into these known functional zones. That's powerful. Did high-resolution spatial data add anything?
It did. They integrated some higher res Xenium data for the intestine. It showed subtle differences, like CM03 being more concentrated in the lamina propria layer just beneath the surface, while CM02 was more spread out.
Details that lower resolution might miss.
Exactly. It highlights how combining the single-cell-derived CM definitions with high-res spatial mapping gives you a really rich picture. You need both.
And does the spatial arrangement tell us anything about how cells within a CM might communicate?
It likely does. Tightly packed immune cell CMs, like in Peyer's patches, might rely heavily on direct cell contact. More spread out CMs with fibroblasts or endothelial cells might need different kinds of signals, maybe secreted factors, to coordinate over slightly larger distances.
The structure dictates the communication style.
Plausibly, yes.
Okay, this framework is really painting a detailed picture. Now, for the really critical part, how does this change? How do these CMs behave in aging and disease?
This is where it gets really insightful for health. They correlated CM activity levels with age. In the spleen, they saw a really clear age-related shift.
What kind of shift?
CM05 activity went up significantly with age, while CM06 activity went down.
So aging isn't just random cell decline, it's a coordinated restructuring of these multicellular teams.
That's what it looks like. And get this. 80% of all the immune cell subsets in the spleen that change significantly with age belong to either CM05 or CM06.
Wow, so these two CMs really capture the core of immune aging in the spleen.
It seems so. They even drilled down further and found specific B cell and T cell subsets within CM05 whose expansion with age was even stronger than the known ABCs. These might be key drivers or markers of spleen aging.
Do they look at why? What molecular programs are changing within these aging CMs?
Yes, they used regulatory network analysis tools like c-Nic. Within those aging CM05 subsets, they found shared regulatory programs, or regulins, being activated.
Governed by specific master switches.
Exactly. Key transcription factors like ATF3, FOS, JUN, KLF6, NFKB1 seem to be acting as hubs, controlling common sets of genes across different cell types within that aging module.
And are those factors known to be involved in aging?
Some definitely are. FOS and JUN activation, the AP1 complex, is a known signature of immune aging in mice, for example. And they saw that NR4A1, a gene linked to T cell exhaustion or dysfunction, was a target of these regulators in the aging CM05 cells.
So it connects the changing cell composition to potential functional decline via specific molecular pathways.
Let's hit deep in second.
It starts to build that mechanistic bridge.
Were there other age-related CM changes?
Yeah, a couple of others. CM09, the one enriched in the thymus, decreased with age, which fits perfectly with thymic involution, the shrinking of the thymus gland.
Right, that makes sense.
And in breast tissue, CM12 activity dropped in postmenopausal women compared to premenopausal.
Interestingly, this linked more strongly to menopausal status than just age itself.
Suggesting it captures physiological state shifts beyond just chronological aging. Very neat. Okay, let's pivot to cancer. They built a cancer atlas too.
They did. A pan-cancer single-cell atlas, 29 cancer types. The goal was to see how these multicellular units are altered or rewired in tumors. They defined cancer-specific CMs, or CCMs.
And how did these CCMs behave?
They compared their activity across healthy tissue, adjacent non-tumor tissue, and the tumor itself. One striking example was in lung squamous cell carcinoma.
What do they see there?
A specific program within one cancer module, CCM02, became highly active specifically in the tumor samples. This program involved upregulation of several S100 family genes, S100A8, A9, A2, across many different cell types within that CCM.
S100 genes.
Yeah.
They're often involved in inflammation and cancer progression, right?
Exactly. And here's the potential clinical punchline. They validated this S100 program in external lung cancer data sets and found it was significantly higher in pre-invasive lung lesions that later progressed to invasive cancer compared to lesions that regressed or stayed put.
Hold on. So the activity level of a specific genetic program within a multicellular team could potentially predict if a precancerous spot will turn malignant.
That's the implication. It points towards potential diagnostic or prognostic markers derived from understanding these coordinated cellular changes, early detection markers, perhaps.
That's huge. Do they see other patterns? Maybe healthy CMs persisting in tumors?
Yes. For example, in skin cancer, the universal healthy CMZR1 often seemed to maintain its activity fairly well within the tumor. They speculated this might relate to why skin cancers sometimes respond better to immunotherapy. Perhaps a more intact underlying healthy tissue ecosystem helps the immune response.
Fascinating idea. So this CM framework offers insights into aging, cancer progression, maybe even treatment response.
It provides a new layer of biological organization to investigate these complex processes. It's about the malfunctioning ecosystem, not just the rogue cell.
So wrapping up, what's the big takeaway here? Why does this research matter?
Fundamentally, it argues that these multicellular modules, these CMs, are crucial units of biological organization. Understanding how cells team up like this is key to understanding tissue function and health and its breakdown in disease.
And the framework, CoVARnet, gives us a way to systematically find and study these teams across tissues.
Right. And the atlases themselves, the healthy pan-tissue one and the pan-cancer one, are just immense resources for the community.
What are the advantages of this approach compared to others?
Well, it leverages single-cell detail, which is finer than bulk or sometimes even spatial data alone. And because it looks at co-occurrence across samples, it can pick up connections between cells that aren't necessarily right next to each other, capturing potentially non-local coordination.
It integrates information differently. Are there limitations or next steps?
For sure. The authors mentioned that the current framework mostly excluded epithelial cells, which are obviously critical. Integrating them, plus the extracellular matrix, maybe even the microbiome, is needed for a fuller picture.
Expanding the ecosystem view.
Exactly. And connecting the CM-level dynamics back down to the specific intracellular gene regulation programs within the cells is another key step. Plus, larger cohorts, more diseases, more phenotypes. There's a lot more to explore with this approach.
It feels like a major step forward, though. We've gone from thinking about trillions of cells to identifying these 12 core teams or multicellular modules that operate across our tissues.
Yeah, these CMs.
We saw how they have tissue preferences, specific locations, and how their balance shifts dramatically in aging and cancer, even offering potential clues for diagnosis. It's amazing how just looking for who hangs out with whom statistically can reveal such deep biological structure.
It really shifts the focus from just cataloging parts to understanding functional assemblies, studying the whole cellular ecosystem.
So here's a final thought for you to ponder. If aging and many complex diseases involve the system-wide disruption or rewiring of these fundamental multicellular teams, should our therapeutic strategies also shift? Instead of targeting just one cell type, should we be looking for ways to modulate or retune entire multicellular modules across different tissues? Could there be master control points within these CMs that offer a way to influence health systemically?
That's the big question this kind of work raises. A challenging but potentially transformative direction for future research.